What will Germany look like without Angela Merkel? Sunday's election is turning out to be one of the tightest in recent history. How will the outcome shape Europe's largest economy? This is Inside Story. Hello there and welcome to the programme. I'm Nastasia Tay. Now, she has been in power for 16 years, leading one of Europe's most powerful nations. But Chancellor Angela Merkel's time in office is coming to an end. Voters now have a clear choice: continue along Merkel's pragmatic policies or turn left and give her party's rivals a chance to govern. Last month's devastating floods have put the issue of climate change front and centre. Nearly 200 people were killed in the worst disaster to hit the nation in decades. Many voters say Germany now must expedite its transition to clean energy sooner than its planned date of 2038. Polls indicate that Merkel's right-leaning Christian Democrats are just slightly behind their centre-left contenders. But what's next for Germany after Merkel? We'll bring in our guests very shortly, but first this update from Hoda Abdelhamid.
Angela Merkel leaves her post as Chancellor of Germany at a time where she's still quite popular among Germans. We do say that she did keep the country stable and prosperous during her 16 years tenure. If anything, she is seen as a crisis manager. She kept the country afloat during the financial crisis. She did deal with the refugee crisis back in 2015, even though it brought her some criticism both at home and at the European level. And even recently, German scientists were behind one of the first vaccines when it came to the coronavirus pandemic. Now her opponents say she wasn't progressive enough. She didn't keep up with her time. Some will tell you that there's poor connectivity in rural areas. Others would tell you that, yes, she did bring about some changes when it comes to the climate crisis, but she didn't do enough. Specifically, she didn't put enough effort to cut carbon emissions. Now, she wanted to keep away from the campaign trail, but she had joined it over the past week simply because her center-right candidate, the candidate of her Christian Democratic Party, Armin Laschet, is not doing so well in the polls, even though he narrowed the gap over in the last moments of this election campaign. Now, her message is, if you want Germany to remain stable, and that's something very important for the German voter, the stability of the country, well, if you want that to continue, then you need to vote again for the centre-left. It's really not clear what will happen. Ask anyone here and they tell you that the race is wide open, but it could be that after 16 years, Germans would also look for a change. Hoda Abdelhamid, Al Jazeera for Inside Story.
Well, since her rise to power back in 2005, Angela Merkel's leadership and her policies have had a huge impact on Germany and the European Union. Let's take a closer look at her legacy. Now, one of her most important domestic policies was her 2011 decision to phase out nuclear energy after Japan's Fukushima disaster. Another landmark policy was opening up Germany's borders to nearly 1 million, mostly Syrian refugees, in 2015. And Merkel has also been credited with keeping the EU together during more than a decade of crises. She also played a critical role in tackling the European and global financial crisis between 2007 and 2009. Well, let's now bring in our guests. In Hamburg, we have Mona El Omari. She's a writer and an activist focusing on social justice. In Berlin, we have Ulrich Bruckner, a political analyst and also professor of political science at Stanford University in Berlin. And in London, Ulrike Franke, a senior policy fellow at the European Council on Foreign Relations. A warm welcome to you all. Thanks so much for joining us today. Now, as we've been saying, Angela Merkel remains incredibly popular in Germany. And if she were to run again, she'd probably win hands down. So I want to start with who might succeed her. It's obviously a very close race, too close to call at the moment, I think, almost within the error margin here. And to remind our viewers, this is an election for the Bundestag or the parliament, not actually for Chancellor itself. And I see we are looking at a potential three-party coalition now for the first time in many, many decades. Ulrich, I'll start with you. Can you give us a lie of the land here? It feels a little bit like the two frontrunners we've been seeing have really been in a competition to prove who can be more like Merkel.
Well, it's not only the two frontrunners that are trying to imitate or to learn from Merkel's success recipe. It is basically everyone trying to present him or herself as someone who can walk in the large footsteps. And if you would ask me to bet, I certainly wouldn't bet at this point, because we have so many options and alternatives that it's even possible that not the party with the largest number of votes would send the chancellor, but the junior partners will choose who's going to be the next chancellor.
Indeed. Well, we may be waiting for some time as well for that process to take place. Now, one of the interesting things with this campaign was, despite the apparent reluctance of the German electorate to embrace change, really, we have seen the rise of the Green Party. I'm curious, Mona, what has been driving that, do you think?
I think one factor for the rise of the Green Party was the rise of the climate change discussion in Germany that was pushed to the forefront by youth movements, mainly like Fridays for Future, for instance, which had been stifled by the pandemic, but I think it had been brought back into the foreground by the recent floodings that happened in Germany during the summer of this year, which cost many victims. There was a lot of property damage. There was a lot of cost in lives, and which Laschet, for example, from the CDU, did not handle perfectly well. It was something that was somewhat scandalized in German media. But I think it's those kinds of developments that make the Green Party look like an option during these elections.
Well, one of Angela Merkel's strengths was that she was seen as such a strong crisis manager, right? And I see that the man who is nominated by the party that's currently just in front by a few points in the last polls, Finance Minister Olaf Scholz, he's been wanting to almost present himself as an incumbent, as the less risky choice. Now, given all this change and this post-Merkel Germany, I imagine there's actually more implications almost for Europe and the EU than only for Germany itself. Ulrike, what is Brussels looking for here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the European Union and the other European member states are definitely watching this election closely. At the same time, I have to say, foreign policy and even European politics wasn't really a big topic in Germany during the election campaign. And I think this frustrated quite a few of foreign observers. I think one of the reasons why that is that despite the fact that there are some differences between the parties, overall, we don't see a situation like, for example, we may see it next year in France, where you have a really Europe and EU critical candidate, Marine Le Pen, against a very pro-European candidate, Emmanuel Macron. In Germany, all main parties are, broadly speaking, pro-European and pro-EU. And so this wasn't a big topic. Nevertheless, there are issues from European defense and kind of fiscal union reform that may be approached differently depending on who wins on Sunday and what coalition forms. Mm-hmm.
Well, given Merkel's seeming popularity, you'd think that her party, the Christian Democrats, would be nominating someone who would almost be a shoo-in for the position. But things, as we've been saying, haven't really gone as planned for Armin Laschet. Ulrich, as Mona was saying, it really started going wrong with the floods and the response, especially in the area which he's in charge of, and that unfortunate situation of Mr. Laschet, laughing in the background. Can you talk us through what happened there and potentially if there's something deeper going on here?
Well, it's hard to say if something deeper is going there. But we got used to someone who, as you said before, knows how to set the right tone. Merkel lobbied for re-elections by coining the term, "you know me." And this, "you know me," like a representation of a conservative attitude, is something you would expect from a governor who's a professional in political leadership. And while the president of state, which is something like a Republican king, was giving a speech live in front of a number of cameras. Laschet and his entourage were standing in the back and cracking jokes. And this is not what you do, even if you are currently not on TV and just standing in the back. That representing something like the mood of the moment and not what people expect in a situation where a lot of them lost family members or lost their homes was something that stayed in the media for weeks. Mm-hmm. And that shows that there is a lack of statesman standard that one would expect from a governor to perform.
Well, as we've been saying, those floods really put climate change front and center in a number of the campaigns. And Mona, we were saying the Greens, we saw the rise of the Greens, but that lead really tailed off after a number of scandals, including apparent plagiarism on the part of their nominee. Now, Mona, I understand she is still very popular with the youth, but given the relative older age of the German electorate, is it her perceived lack of experience, perhaps, that's really driven that decrease in her popularity? And I'm also curious, given that climate change was front and centre, how did the floods and the response to that not actually give the Green Party a bit of a boost?
I think you're posing a two-part question here, and my response to the first part would be to maybe cast a look at maybe German politics overall. I mean, the fact that there have been these plagiarism issues, it's not the first time that a German politician would be plagued by those, and not just specifically within the Green Party, but also in other parties we had these issues, these types of instances. And whilst they had been somewhat scandalized at the time, they never kept the respective parties, for example, the CDU or the SPD, from being in government at that time. So I think I'd rather pose the question of whether pretending this to be so scandalous is not much rather a device during these campaigning times. And I think another issue and in this set of circumstances would be, and I think that brings me to the answer of the second question here, is that there is, within Germany, within recent weeks, there has been a discourse of a so-called, like the fear of a slide to the left or even the extreme left. Looking at German history, there have been three SPD chancellors in the history of the Republic of Germany. So this perceived or this so-called slide to the left is not necessarily something that is, in my opinion, compatible with reality, but it's a ploy that is being used in order to campaign. And I think parties, SPD and CDU, next to maybe the inexperience of the Green Party's candidate, were able to make it appear that the Green Party is somewhat ideologically connected to the left, maybe even extreme left, and therefore has been able to frame them within that narrative of so-called slide to the far left, which
Ulrika,
in Germany...
Sorry to interrupt you there, Mona, because I do want to bring Ulrika in here. I can see that you're agreeing, and I'm curious about how this then plays out on an EU stage, because we're obviously looking at a potential coalition government. There's been a lot of speculation about who might actually constitute that government. And, I mean, Scholz from the Social Democrats, even though it's a traditionally left party, has really been trying to portray himself as more of a centrist character. Did you think that all of this might change the way that Germany engages with Europe?
Yeah, so actually I'm not really agreeing with Mona in the sense that I think that this idea of a possible slide to the left in Germany is not completely out of the question insofar as we have been discussing the possibility, albeit, you know, not the most likely possibility, but a possibility of having what's called the red-green-red coalition, so the SPD, Social Democrats with the Green, and the Linke, the extreme left, which is polling at kind of single-digit numbers, but they could end up in the next coalition government. And not only is it possible, but in fact, recent polls show that the majority of supporters of the Green Party, so 70% of the Green Party supporters, actually prefer this coalition to all other coalitions. So first of all, you know, there is some appetite in some parts of the population for indeed going far more left. And the thing is, what's interesting, in such a theoretical red-green-red coalition, the one thing where these parties really disagree, or let's put it this way, where the Linke is really quite the outlier, is on foreign and defense policy. Because mm-hmm. the Linke is a party that, for example, rejects NATO, wants to either, you know, kind of abolish NATO completely, or at least for Germany to leave NATO. It wants to create a new security alliance with Russia. So if this party would be part of the coalition, that would be quite a big change potentially for Germany. And that would be something that I think most European partners and indeed, you know, international allies of Germany would be quite worried about, because mm-hmm. you don't really know, you know, how much influence this party may actually have on Germany's foreign policy. Now, we shouldn't overemphasize neither the likelihood nor the kind of impact this small party might have, but we can't discard it completely this time. And this in and of itself actually makes this quite interesting.
Sure. Well, I feel like we can't really talk about the broader European situation and foreign policy without really talking about France as a European power. I see both Scholz and Laschet went to Paris to meet with French President Emmanuel Macron just a couple of weeks ago. Ulrich, how important is that particular relationship for the German electorate, or do they not really care?
Well, it is really a pity that we didn't discuss European affairs nor transatlantic relations or the future of European defense. In the end, in the last weeks, it was all about domestic questions of social issues, pension, taxation, but not taxation in the sense of what's the future of a fiscal union. None of the topics that Macron was bringing up even before the previous elections to try to find support from Germany. And I was predicting that we will get soon a strong signal from Berlin to support Macron, who was such a relief that he won the elections against Marine Le Pen 4 years ago. And now the situation is still kind of similar, that Germany is in some sort of a wait-and-see position. And that will really make a difference who is in what form of coalition in Germany in the future, because we saw Scholz sort of flirting with the idea of strengthening the European Monetary Union with something like a fiscal union when he coined the term that this is a Hamilton moment, when we suddenly allowed the European Union to get indebted in order to finance the next generation EU recovery fund after the pandemic. So that will certainly be an issue with a much more fiscally conservative party like the Liberal Party or the Christian Democratic Union that also mm-hmm. doesn't really have an appetite to centralize more macroeconomic competences. But one could expect something like this from the Social Democrats, depending on who will be their junior coalition partners.
Sure. I want to dig in a little more into the legacy that Merkel has left here when it comes to some of those policies, because it really feels like her background as a scientist really made for more pragmatic policies, almost a kind of attempt at depolarizing policy. I mean, she, as you said, she defended the euro during the Greek debt crisis. She supported that pandemic EU recovery fund, which was really financed by common borrowing. She also famously in 2015 kept Germany's borders open. Mona, I'm curious, how do you think Germans regard that decision now? Because that obviously came at a very heavy political price and really essentially also led potentially to the rise of the right-leaning AfD. So how do Germans reflect upon that decision now?
I think my response would lend itself to also draw back for a quick second to something that was said earlier about the left as a party. And I think I would call into question how very left the left still is, especially with recent instances of Sarah Wagenknecht calling minorities in Germany, for example, the trans community, the queer community, bizarre minorities. During the so-called refugee crisis, Sarah Wagenknecht was also in favor of limiting the number of refugees that could enter Germany. So I would highly call into question how left the left still is. And that brings me to the question just now is, I think what happened during the discourse is that Merkel's policies and Merkel as a political figure was drawn as much more progressive maybe than she actually is, because yes, she did, or her government did open the borders during the refugee, so-called refugee crisis, but the way people have been treated here does not really speak to any progressive or just critical type of framing of the situation. As another example would be Merkel's stance on same-sex marriage. So I think she has been painted as much more progressive than she really is, and what lends itself to do that is the circumstance that Germany has had a CDU government for so long.
Ulrike, I want to bring you in here on Merkel's progressivism, because she obviously did champion same-sex marriage, but taking a step back from all of that, she has also been this incredibly, incredibly strong female leader, not only in Germany, but on the global stage for the last 16 years. And she's also brought in a number of very powerful women to very high-ranking positions within the EU. So, Ulrike, let me ask you then, has that shaken things up in Brussels? Has that changed the way that women are viewed then in the higher echelons of politics, perhaps?
I'm not sure. So it's interesting because, yes, on the one hand, for 16 years, the most important and arguably most powerful politician in Europe was indeed a woman that was generally very popular everywhere, so that, you know, should have some kind of impact. But Merkel personally never really championed any kind of feminist agenda. She very rarely talked about these issues. There were instances where she was asked, you know, do you feel like you're feminist? And she wasn't quite sure whether she could claim this label. So certainly kind of rhetorically, this wasn't a big topic for her. At the same time, yes, over the last 16 years, we've had two German female defense ministers. So first mm-hmm. von der Leyen, now Annegret Kramp-Karrenbauer. Von der Leyen, of course, went on to become Commission President in the European Union. So I think all of this has kind of normalized female leadership, which, you know, I think overall is good news. But I don't think that Merkel really pushed these issues in particular. And maybe, as a last sentence, maybe that's actually quite good, because it may help with the normalizing if you don't overemphasize mm-hmm. it. But I know quite a few, you know, feminist activists in Germany weren't super happy with the fact that she didn't really seem to push this agenda a lot.
Ulrike, you're sitting in Berlin, so I'm going to give you the last very brief word here, if you don't mind. Obviously, Germany so far over the last 16 years has really become an economic success. Huge challenges, though, still lie ahead, especially when it comes to, as we've been saying, climate change, the green transition, huge infrastructure challenges as well. After 16 years of relative stability, are you nervous about what might happen now?
Well, no, I wouldn't be nervous depending on... No, it doesn't matter who's going to be the successor of Merkel. The country will not be in a situation that would make people nervous. Of course, it will be a different style. It will be a different performance. And the coalition priorities will also different from what we got. But compared with countries that are hugely polarized or in a situation in which it could lead in a complete opposite direction, like imagine, for example, Marine Le Pen will become president of France next year, then it will be a very different country from what it mm-hmm. used to be. So none of this will happen in Germany. And I don't think there is a reason to be nervous, although there are very different expectations on whatever side of the political spectrum you look at it. Of course, progressives would wish Merkel would have been more progressive, but she mm-hmm. wouldn't have been in power for 16 years if she wouldn't have moved the Conservative Party more to the center.
Sure.
And now we have so many centrist parties of different colors that in the end, I'm pretty sure we will get something like a stable coalition.
She's certainly changed the political landscape, hasn't she? Well, we'll continue watching the election very closely indeed. Thank you to all of our guests, Mona El Amari, Ulrich Bruckner and Ulrika Franke. And thank you, too, for watching. You can see this programme again anytime by visiting our website. That's aljazeera.com. And for further discussion, do go to our Facebook page. That's facebook.com/AJInsideStory. Remember, you can also join the conversation on Twitter. Our handle is @AJInsideStory. From me, Nastasia Tay, and the whole team here in Doha. Bye for now.